On This Week Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Curtis Frankel and Mr. Brian Chee back on the show today. Now, data breaches continue to be a trend, and consumers are not going to take it anymore. We're going to talk about what that means. Plus, we also have a great guest today, Mariam Blandini from IX Systems. He's going to talk about open source hyperconverged storage. You definitely shouldn't miss it. Twit on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 521, recorded December 2nd, 2022. Mary Exnas. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by OnLogic. OnLogic is helping innovators around the world solve their most complex technology challenges using OnLogic industrial computers, which are engineered for reliability, even in environments that would challenge or destroy traditional computer hardware. Learn more and find out about OnLogic's 30-day risk-free hardware trial by visiting onlogic.com/twit. And by Hover. Whether you're a developer, photographer, or a small business, Hover has something for you to expand your projects and get the visibility you want. Go to hover.com/twit to get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. And by Code Comments, an original podcast from Red Hat that lets you listen in on two experienced technologists as they describe their building process and what they've learned from their experiences. Search for Code Comments in your podcast player. Welcome to Twit, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world is connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through this big world of the enterprise. I can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals and the experts, starting with our very own and very busy senior analyst at Omdia. He's the man with the pulse of the enterprise. He is Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, welcome back. How are you doing? It's been a couple weeks.
It has been a while, and I wish I could say I'd been hard at work for those 2 weeks, but I haven't. I took last week and this week off, so I'm trying to relax a little bit, get some sleep in, and be ready to go back and do some work for the last few weeks of the year before we roar into 2023.
I know. I can't believe it's getting there. So close now, so close to the last couple episodes of This Week in Enterprise Tech. But, you know, we can't do these last couple episodes without our very own Mr. Brian Chee, net architect at SkyFiber and net expert all around tech geek. He's always doing something. Chee Bird, how you been? What's been keeping you busy?
I've actually been on Discord channels yakking with the folks over at Yolink. If you've been listening to me ramble, I've been, you know, I'm very big fan of the LoRa wireless technology. It fixes a lot of interesting IoT issues. And in addition, because it goes through a hub or gateway more accurately, it's a lot easier to secure than, say, you know, Bluetooth or Wi-Fi and so forth. So I'm slowly getting rid of my Wi-Fi based IoT gear, which is going to make my home network a lot more secure. And with a quarter mile range, it means I can put sensors in some really interesting places. So that'd be fun.
Now, I tell you, you got me to the LoRa and the Yolink stuff as well. And I'm just going kind of crazy with the different automations with IFTTT and Alexa and Actions and doing different things in the house. So I'm just seeing how creative I can get with them. It's actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, we've actually been yakking with some of the developers, and we did an article, or actually kind of a story, on the and a new set of IoT integration systems. And I was kind of saying, gee, I wish such a thing existed. And one of our viewers said, well, how about I write one? It's like, dude, sure.
That's cool.
So we've apparently got some serious talent in our viewership.
We do. We do. We have the professionals. That's right. We have the professionals. Well, thank you, Cheaper, for being here. I'm sure we'll have to talk a little bit more about LoRa later because it's actually a really great protocol and lots of great products there. But first, we have to get into some enterprise news because it's been a busy week in the enterprise. Now, data breaches continue to be on a trend. However, consumers are starting to put their foot down. They want more protections and assurances than ever before. So we're going to talk about what those are. Plus, we have a great guest today, Mario Blandini. He's from IX Systems. He's marketing from IX Systems. We're going to talk about open source hyper-converged storage. Lots of fun stuff to talk about there. So definitely stick around. But first, like we always do, we do have to get into this week's Enterprise Tech Blips. Supply chain continues to be on a trend as an issue for all industries. In fact, America's seven dominant freight rail carriers have been struggling to come to an agreement on a new contract, which could mean a strike in the coming weeks. However, on a lighter note, there are some good news for transportation. This week, Tesla has finally unveiled their electrified tractor trailer. Now, according to this Engadget article, the new EV semi was produced by Tesla's Nevada Gigafactory for Pepsi, which ordered about 100 of these vehicles. Now, the design of the vehicle is quite unique. According to Musk, the, quote, design, they're actually designed like a bullet, and they will come equipped with a 1 milliwatt battery pack. And if you want to talk performance, it can go from 0 to 60 in just 20 seconds. That's pretty good for a big semi-truck, especially one that can carry 80,000 pounds at a time. Now, what is also impressive here is that it can go from 0 to 80% charge in just 30 minutes. So that makes it less layover time requirements or shorter pit stops. Now let's talk tech. Now these semis are also outfitted with enhanced autopilot capabilities as well as a jackknife mitigation system, blind spot sensors, and data logging for fleet management. Now if you've ever encountered a semi jackknifing as before and they come down the mountains of Pennsylvania or Washington State, you haven't really lived seeing not seeing that. It's freaking scary. So many technologies are out there, but if you have one that actually mitigates that type of risk, even better. Now, it shows that Tesla is providing more than the vehicle being an EV as an incentive for commercial use. Now, Pepsi is immediately seeing those values there and putting it in order. The question looming throughout the industry is whether Tesla will be able to meet production demands due to the shortage of chips and the limit supply of battery cells. Now, if nothing else, if successful, Tesla may have kickstarted another evolution in the transportation industry.
One of the things we've talked about a lot here on Twyatt, and we'll continue to discuss, is software supply chain security. With open source software a fact of life in the enterprise, it's impossible to say you're taking security seriously if you ignore the parts and processes that make up your enterprise applications. That came into focus this week when security firm Legit Security published an advisory on December 1st stating that an artifact poisoning weakness could affect software projects that use GitHub Actions by triggering the build process when a change is detected in a software dependency. Now, GitHub Actions is a service for automating development pipelines in the largest software and component repository on Earth. An article on Dark Reading explains that this vulnerability is not just a proof of concept. Legit Security simulated an attack on the project that manages Rust, causing the project to recompile using a malicious version of the popular GCC software library. Since many open source projects hosted on GitHub automate the build and testing processes for new contributions, it's likely that this vulnerability could have an impact on hundreds, if not thousands, of projects. Legit Security explained that in a vulnerable workflow, any GitHub user can create a fork that builds an artifact, then inject the artifact into the original repository build process and modify that output. This is another form of a software supply chain attack where the build output is modified by an attacker. GitHub has confirmed the issue and paid a bounty for the information while Rust fixed its vulnerable pipeline. The company, this is GitHub, has not explained whether the larger vulnerability has been patched, although it acknowledged the issue and expanded the ways of excluding submissions from outside collaborators from being automatically inserted into the Actions pipeline. The company updated its Git Artifact and List Artifact APIs with the goal of providing more information to help determine whether an artifact can be trusted. Now, regardless of whether or not you're confident that the vulnerability has been patched, this is a wake-up call to look carefully at all of the tools, process, and code building blocks that make up your enterprise software and deploy your own software tools to thoroughly vet each and every piece of your applications.
So, a big thanks to bleepingcomputer.com. Though this particular article has been covered by probably just about every major journalistic outlet on earth, because it has that big an impact. So a little portion is the United States government, through the Federal Communications Commission, has banned the sale of equipment from Chinese telecommunications and video surveillance vendor Huawei, ZTE, Hytera, Hikvision, and Dahua due to, quote, unacceptable risks to national security, unquote. The Federal Communications Commission adopted new rules prohibiting communications equipment deemed to pose an unacceptable risk to national security from being authorized for importation or sale in the United States, according to the FCC press release. Well, this goes beyond the original ban for U.S. federal activities to now banning these brands from being sold in the United States and territories. Well, we did have a U.S. Huawei person on episode 404 back on July 31st of this year, where the official line was that Huawei America is different. Well, apparently the FCC and administration think differently. I'd like to also point out that such actions do not happen overnight, and has most likely had its beginning quite a while ago. And I seriously doubt the FCC kicked this action off without support by federal law enforcement.
Now, it may seem like ransomware threats have trended down because the news has been focusing on other things. According to the FBI, that isn't the case. Now, in this TechCrunch article, there's a joint advisory from the CISA and the FBI regarding a Cuban ransomware gang who has extorted $60 million in ransom payments from victims from last December until this August. Now, the latest advisory is a follow-up to a flash alert released by FBI in December of 2021, which revealed that the gang had earned close to $44 million in ransom payments after attacks on more than 49 entities in five critical infrastructure sectors in the U.S. Now, since that time, the gang's brought in about $60 million more from attacks on 100 different organizations. Now, if you've noticed, that means that since the FBI flashed in 2021, the number of compromised organizations has actually doubled. Now, you may be wondering, what have been the targets of these gangs? Well, most of them have been critical infrastructure, including financial services, government facilities, healthcare, and public health, critical manufacturing, and information technology. Now, in August this year, the gang was linked to the ransomware attack targeting the nation state of Montenegro, and that targeted the government systems and other critical infrastructures and utilities, including electricity, water systems, and transportation. Cuba was also linked to a breach of California's Department of Motor Vehicles in April this year. The FBI and CISA added that the ransomware gang has modified its tactics, techniques, and procedures since the start of the year and been linked to the ROMCOM malware and custom remote access Trojans for command and control and the industrial spy ransomware. Now, what does this mean for you and your organization? What can you do? Well, we obviously have the obligatory guidance of at-risk organizations should also prioritize patching about those known vulnerabilities that are out there, plus training. That's right. Train employees to spot and report phishing attacks, to enable and enforce phishing-resistant multi-factor authentication as well, because that definitely helps and adds another layer. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the bites. We're going to talk a little bit about the fear of security of your data and becoming a forcing function for maybe even some legislature around there. But before We do have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's OnLogic. Now, sometimes you need a computer rig that's, you know, it's rugged. It can resist the elements. And I've actually constructed a single board computer rig before and mounted it on the bottom of a truck to actually collect some telemetry data. Now, let me tell you, I worked for months to secure and harden that computer. I just wish I had an OnLogic device at that time because I could have focused more on the data collection rather than building and securing the device. Now, OnLogic is the first choice in industrial computing for innovators around the world who need computing power that can survive, and thrive where traditional hardware might fail. Knowledgix designs and creates computing solutions that can fit in the palm of your hand while powering everything from advanced robotics and AI to manufacturing automation, digital media solutions, and smart agricultural technologies. Now get this, the computers are passively cooled and ventless, and that only makes them quiet, but it also protects them and the internal components from dust and other airborne contaminants. Plus, constructing them like that, Onlogic has been able to produce a completely solid state device to protect against shock and vibration as well. Really cool stuff here. Now, other design features protect systems from extreme temperatures and interference. Now, the team at Onlogic truly cares about creating right-fit solutions tailored specifically to solve unique technology challenges, especially for your organization. Now, Onlogic partners with leading software companies like AWS to enable rapid evaluation and deployment of edge computing solutions. Now, for example, Onlogic's line of AWS to IoT Greengrass compatible computers has been vetted by AWS, bringing you the peace of mind that it will work right out of the box. Now, if you need computing solutions that can be easily configured to your particular needs, supported by industry experts who are just a phone call away, website chat, or even email away, and are delivered to you quickly, the team at Onlogic is ready to help. If you'd rather do it yourself, Onlogic's easy-to-use website gives you the power to configure and order your next industrial computing device quickly and easily right online. Now, all in-stock online orders are custom-built, thoroughly tested, and shipped as little as 5 days. And when you need a custom configured industrial computer, edge server, or panel PC delivered quickly, Onlogic should be your first destination. To get started and learn more about Onlogic's 30-day risk-free hardware trial, connect with their experts or visit onlogic.com/twit. That's onlogic.com/twit. And we thank Onlogic for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's time for the Bice. Now, we hear in the news all the time about data breaches and how it's impacting the commercial sectors. Some weeks, it actually dominates the headlines. I've seen a ton of them. However, consumers are really starting to worry here, right? I'm starting to worry. In fact, Twit has actually covered recently the LastPass breach, which is, you know, a big deal out there. It's impacted both commercial and consumers alike. And the fear of data loss and data security is trending, especially with consumers. In fact, according to a recent report in this Dark Reading article, in the Thales Consumer Digital Trust Index, almost half, 48% of consumers report being victims of a data breach, higher than their global counterparts at just 33%. Now, consumers are being hit left and right and being impacted by the news, especially cyber attacks like T-Mobile's attack in 2021, Drizzly's 2021 breach or 2020 breach, and of course, just recently LastPass and others. Now, consumers are not going to take it anymore. That's right. And they're starting to make the decisions about their data as they handle their, how companies actually handle their data going forward. Now, even more interesting here, according to some of this data, 1 in 20 reported first hearing about a breach affecting them on the news. So they actually had to hear it from the news first instead of the company directly. Now, 11% of those companies took up to 6 months to inform consumers about a data breach. Now, you ask me, failing to do that sooner is actually a trust problem. I mean, you can't trust that company anymore if they fail to actually promote and let you know that they've actually had a breach and that your data was part of that. Now, how have consumers responded? Well, to me, they're responding in kind here. Just over a fifth of them have actually stopped using a company that suffered a data breach, with a large portion of those requesting that the company delete their information altogether, get rid of it, while others are keeping closer eye on their accounts for suspicious activity. That's 25% of them. Now, being transparent is not enough for consumers, definitely not for me sometimes. In fact, of surveyed consumers, 53%, over half, believe companies should offer compensation to victims. But when it comes to overseeing regulations, only 31% believe companies should actually receive large fines for breaches. Now, more than half actually believe customers should be forced, a company should be forced into mandating or mandatory data protection controls following a breach. This includes encryption, two-factor auth, that kind of thing, which have, you know, been really good options out there. And just under half believe companies should be subject to more stringent regulation. Now, I want to bring my co-host back in here because it sounds like, you know, this is not a new thing. I mean, we've been dealing with data being leaked at a consumer level for a long time. We talked, heard Target hitting, getting hit a while back, Home Depot, you know, it. Years and years ago, people losing their data, people losing their identities because of these data losses. But customers now, for some reason, are just being more sensitive about it. However, European Union, EU, seems to have more protections here. Curtis, do you think that these protections that the EU is providing would make sense to come to the US?
I would love to see GDPR type protections in the US. Maybe not every single bit of GDPR, but protections that largely echo what GDPR provides for consumers, I think would be a good thing. And the interesting part is that virtually every company of any size already has the mechanisms in place to comply with GDPR. Because if you are a company of any size and you have any customers in Europe, you're required to comply with GDPR. It's just the way it works. So there's the fact that we can have this as a possibility. All it requires is political will. I wish us the very best of luck on that score. But until then, we're going to be left with this patchwork of state regulations. California leads the way. Some states have no protections at all, or perversely protect the companies that violate privacy rules or privacy standards better than they protect the consumers. I think, to be honest, most companies would prefer to see a national standard, even if it's a tough one, than have to comply with this patchwork of state standards. So I think there is the possibility of something happens, although I think if it doesn't happen in the next 6 to 7 months, its chances of being part of this Congress are pretty much gone.
So it's interesting that you brought it up, because obviously we don't have the same protections as the EU and the United States, and each state might have their own protections like California. But it does seem like there are some industries out there, some regulations around industries. Cheaper, is that right? Around industries, maybe like financial or fintech type industries, or there's some like regulations around when data breaches are happening, healthcare, that kind of thing?
Well, certainly. Let's put it this way. You know, the folks at PCI, the credit card people, when I first started doing PCI audits, I was going, wow, this is kind of lame. And over the years, it's really grown up. Whenever large sums of money are involved, regulatory, you know, ad hoc, in this case, PCI started, you know, in private industry, it started growing up very quickly. So by the time I left the University of Hawaii, PCI actually started looking like something reasonable. Now, the HIPAA world started off pretty hot with a fairly high bar. And the big problem with HIPAA is a lot of uneven application. Which brings me actually to my point. Having a GDPR-like regulation, in this case, it's being called the American, American Data Privacy and Protection Act, ADPPA, is being proposed. It would be really nice to be able to have a all-encompassing something like, you know, GDPR. I say this only because when you start having to have different sets of auditing standards or different sets of anything, you know, when it comes to security, it starts getting more expensive. You know, which one do you follow? Do you have to follow all of them? Do I just go and use a sledgehammer and just make life really miserable for my users just so that I can survive, you know, audit X, just because nobody really has a clue on how to do, say, a combination like HIPAA and PCI and SARBOX, you know, in some large health organizations. So you start getting, you know, things layered on really thickly, and you start getting in the way of doing business. So I'm actually in favor of having a GDPR-like environment, only because I firmly believe we're going to start getting less complexity, because people will be able to have, you know, more training in it. We're going to have, you know, hopefully more consistent breach notification rules instead of having to go through a big giant list. Because if anyone's ever had, you know, billing errors on their health insurance, that's because there's so many standards on how to do things. If we already have an IT, or actually a security specialist shortage in a huge, huge way, and adding more and more complex and layered and differing regulations just means you're going to have more specialists in an already tough market. So anyway, it also means things like, you know, security auditing audits become easier. I've actually done a lot of security audits for servers of varying flavors, Windows, Linux, BSD, and so forth. And when you have feet in two worlds, the audit gets ungodly complex. Being able to have something where enough people have to do it or should be doing it. I actually saw a new logging system, and there was actually a GDPR checkmark. That's going to be very, very cool. So if we can now start having checkmarks and saying, okay, check this off and we can have it. Or in the case of the Sonic Walls I use, there's actually a check mark for FIS, you know, FIS, which is kind of cool. So anyway, I'm rambling. You know, things like breach notification rules have to get better, more consistent, and having less regulations or a more encompassing regulation might get us there. I'd really like to try and see if I can get some security specialists from Europe on the show and get their, you know, spin on whether or not GDPR has been helpful. And what's on the screen now is the breach notification regulation history, which it sounds like a really, really good start. And I'd love to see us get something a lot more consistent.
So one thing I'm curious about, Curtis, I'm going to throw this to you, because obviously recently President Biden put out an executive order around nation cybersecurity, and there's lots of things kind of encapsulated within this order. Obviously, it's getting companies to scramble to try to adhere to this executive order. Do you feel like this particular order has a bunch of things in it that also protect consumers?
I think it has less that directly protect consumers than we would like. I mean, let's face it, anything that adds to the total cybersecurity of an organization is going to, in many ways, have an impact on consumers, just because it will help protect their data. But the fact is that most of what goes into some of the nation's cybersecurity and NIST responsibilities have to do with what's defined as critical infrastructure. And I've told a number of people in companies, a good rule of thumb, if you're not sure whether your company is part of critical infrastructure, assume it is, because the government definitions cast a wide net in defining critical infrastructure. With that said, it tends to focus on things like energy production and food safety and all of that, rather than the private and personal information of the consumers. As I said, the good news is that if the overall cybersecurity posture of an organization is improved, it's going to improve the security and therefore the privacy of its customers. But I would really like to see some guidelines coming out in the not too distant future that look specifically at PII or personally identifiable information and how it should be protected. Not in a prescriptive way, you have to use this product and this technique, but in a general functional way, using whatever methods are best for you and your organization. You have to protect information, PII, to this standard. Do it any way you want, but meet this standard at a minimum.
Right. I 100% agree with that. I threw this in the chat really quick. I wonder if Ant saw it. There's a great Wirecutter, New York Times article here that talks about all the different data privacy laws, data protection laws in the U.S. from different states. And you can definitely see how diverse they are and how kind of, you know, Swiss cheesed they are throughout the United States here. And again, we definitely need some consolidation, some normalization there from a law perspective, even at the federal level. Unfortunately, this is just the state of the union, essentially, of what it means for data protection. Now, you know, I think part of this, too, is one thing that we've talked about, even from an organization perspective, is that you assume breach. You assume the fact that your data is not protected and that if it is breached and somebody steals it, what does that mean for you? And so I think that part of it is, as a consumer, you protect yourself by just thinking, okay, who has my information? Where is my information at? And does those companies have protections in place to ensure that it's safe? And some of these retail organizations, they just do not. And so when they ask you to save credit card information or save address information in their system, does it make sense for you to do so? Maybe don't do that. Obviously, organizations who don't take it seriously, who have a bad track record, maybe these are companies that you don't put on your list of ones that you buy from or that you deal with on a regular basis. But again, if organizations do respond in kind and they respond in a way where they start putting things in place before an issue happens, and an issue does still happen, that at least means they were taking responsibility for it. But again, you have to also essentially put this on your own decision tree of whether that means that you need to, you still can trust them in the future. So we'll definitely see how organizations are responding, especially over the holiday season, because there's a lot of people obviously purchasing things and putting their information out there and they're trying to get the best deal. And sometimes these best deals don't necessarily come from a reliable source. So we'll definitely see, hopefully, people pay more attention to that as they get to the holiday season. Well, folks, that does it for the Bites. It's time for the guest, which is my favorite part of the show. But before we go there, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Hover. Now it's time to make plans and let Hover help you achieve them. If you're a blogger, creating a portfolio, building an online store, just want to make a more memorable redirect to your LinkedIn page, Hover has the best domain names and email addresses out there. Email at your domain name is a key to connecting with consumers and customers and building trust for your brand. Now, personal branding is more important than ever in today's digital age of social media and e-commerce. A personal brand will allow you to build a distinct identity, gain credibility, and maintain control. Now, it helps you stand out from the crowd or your competitors, and it showcases your accomplishments and your abilities. Now, if you're selling a service or a product, your personal brand will emphasize what you bring to the table or how you ease your customers' pain points. Now, let Hover help you. Hover has domain-based emails for all your needs, small or large. It's easy to set up. You can add as many mailboxes to your domain as you need. When your domain renews, your mailboxes will too. Now, the prices are unbeatable. They're unbeatable. Get access from anywhere. You can use the email app you already have, or if you don't want to use an app, they have webmail. You can actually access it wherever you go. Hover isn't just there to upsell you on stuff. They just want to help you. They have pro-level tools, powerful domain and email management tools that are intuitive and easy to use, whether you're a web pro or just getting started. And they're private and secure. With Whois privacy protection included,
your privacy and your private information or remain just that, private. Now, Hover Connect lets you pick the service you want to use to build and host your website. Connect helps you get started using the domain name with just a couple of clicks. Now, personally, I really love how Hover's ease of use. They have a huge collection of top-level domains, plus super easy to transfer. That's right. It makes life easier. If you already have a domain somewhere else, transfer it. Some of the other domain registrars out there run things like a used car salesman. And if you ever tried to transfer things using some of those other guys, it's a headache. At Hover, you're a customer and not a source of data. Take back control of your data with reliable, tracker-free email. Hover is trusted by hundreds of thousands of customers who use their domain names and email to create their personal brand and turn their ideas into reality. Whether you're a developer, photographer, or a small business, Hover has something for you to expand your projects and get the visibility you want. Go to hover.com/twit to get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension the entire first year. That's hover.com/twit for 10% off your domain extension for a full year. And we thank Hover for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now my favorite part of the show where we get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twiat Riot. Today we have Mario Blandini. He's VP of Marketing from IX Systems. Welcome to the show, Mario.
Awesome to be here. Thank you.
Now, before we get to talking about open source storage, because it's a really interesting topic, I'm actually interested to hear about all the different options here. Our audience loves to hear people's origin stories. Can you maybe take us through a journey through tech and where it brought you to IX Systems?
Would love to. Didn't have any money to go to college, so I joined the Marine Corps. My dad was a Navy vet in Vietnam and said I was too weak to make it one day in the Navy. So enjoyed 6 years of doing that, where I was a Banyan Vine system administrator and an SCO Unix system administrator. Went and got a Novell certification. Maybe I'm dating myself a little bit, but I had a chance to work on a lot of old school IT stuff, storage stuff as well. And it seems that being a kid that grew up in Silicon Valley, the tractor beam, when I went back home after being in the Marine Corps, got me to be more of a marketing guy for a high tech company, because I really wasn't the best Unix sysadmin. I wouldn't hire myself to be a Unix sysadmin, but I've enjoyed getting to really serve IT people for some number of years.
Fantastic. Well, we have a lot to talk about here. I mean, obviously the concept of storage is a big topic for people. People are worried specifically about locking into cloud storage and cloud storage services. And we've talked to a lot of organizations about this. Now, IX Systems, they have this concept of hyperconverged storage. Can you maybe take us through what hyperconverged storage is and what does it mean for an organization or even somebody who's trying to use them?
Sure. I'll just do a real quick rewind, because people are probably saying, what the heck's TrueNAS and who's IX Systems? If you've ever heard of FreeNAS, IX Systems is the company behind the open source project, which as of about 18 months ago was officially transitioned to being called TrueNAS. So think of TrueNAS is FreeNAS. And the hyperconverged part is that we now have two editions of TrueNAS. The tried and true FreeNAS to TrueNAS that everybody might remember, that's based on FreeBSD as its underlying operating system. And for the hyperconverged part, think of it as the same underlying components of TrueNAS, but running on Debian Linux, giving it the ability to then take advantage of Kubernetes and containers, and thus making it a hyperconverged solution. So no matter what you're looking to do, scale up or scale out, there's an open source, tested, and well-used software out there that's in production, as we like to say, the most deployed operating system for storage on the planet, that being TrueNAS.
Now, you mentioned that obviously TrueNAS is built on Linux, and it offers all these different features, including things like containers and Kubernetes and all that stuff. What does it mean for organizations? How do they transition to that? Like, if they're already using, some of the bigger cloud storage organizations out there, they want to move to more of a managed and a self-reliant approach for like this type of system. How do they do that?
Sure. Well, think of TrueNAS as being mostly on premises. You can run it in the cloud, But for most practical use cases, people are using it on premises, either in a virtual machine, but most often on hardware, turning what would otherwise be some standard hardware into a storage appliance. So in that particular use case, it can be thought of these days, even though it's got the word NAS in it, these days in the second score of the 21st century, NAS really has all the interfaces that people are looking for, whether it be block, file, object, or app. And in the case of being able to support the underlying media, it's NVMe, hard drives, SSDs, and a hybrid combination of all those things. So we do have folks who want to repatriate stuff from the cloud, but just as many folks, if not more, that think of it as your garden variety on-premises storage, which before people might have thought, hey, open source really wasn't for me. But with the maturity of the way the project's gone and as much development that's gone into the open source project, we are enjoying, at least at IX Systems, the best times we've ever had, because I think folks are looking for that alternative for storage, which may not come with the same costs that you're normally associated or normally thinking of paying when it comes to your on-premises storage.
So obviously a big proponent of this is the ability to scale out. One thing I've actually noticed is there's lots of documentation talking about TrueNAS, but then there's also FreeNAS. What's the difference between those?
Yeah, FreeNAS, just think of it as what TrueNAS had been known before the name change. So TrueNAS is the modern modern name for FreeNAS.
Okay, great. And what from a perspective of, I see just the name change, but also what are you seeing from a trending perspective? Like what are the trends that are seeing from an on-premise storage or a NAS perspective? What are people looking for? What are organizations looking for from those types of solutions?
Well,
obviously other
historically,
than scaling.
Yeah. Yeah. So historically, what's interesting, I'd say just from a perspective, people would think of storage as measured by capacity and performance. The idea that you need a certain amount of capacity that meets a certain service level. And there had been talks, heck, over the last decade that all flash would replace hard drives. Yet here we are where there's still a great use case for both. And I think the trend that we are seeing, at least in adoption of open source storage in the enterprise, is that the criticality of data naturally would dictate that you should spend as much money as you got to make sure it's well protected. But not all data needs to have the same SLA. And these days, it's impossible to figure out what to throw out, especially with the future value of data around AI, machine learning, and such. So folks are looking for more capacity. And how do you get more capacity if your budget, if your requirements double, but you don't have double the money? So what we're seeing is that a lot more enterprises are looking to using open source storage, whether it be from Red Hat or using MinIO or in this case, you know, TrueNAS from IX. It really creates what I would call the other category, the unnamed category in enterprise storage, because certainly the category measured by the dollars spent, greater than $45 billion a year, is got its growth rate, but there's also people looking to store even more data, and that's where open source technologies allow you to have that tier 4 or tier 5. And you'd be surprised how many organizations find out that that stuff that they did for their backups of their backups runs their virtualization infrastructure as well, if not better, than the storage that they would normally pay for. So we at IX have... We come to work with a passion to give this software away for free and have folks experience data freedom. And we're able to fund that project by selling turnkey appliances that are consumed and have the experience very much like you'd buy enterprise storage today.
I love that. I love the whole concept of just data freedom in general. I do want to bring my co-host back in because, of course, they're chomping at the bit here. And Chibert has lots of experience with storage. So I'm going to actually bring in Chibert first. Chibert?
Yeah, the funny thing is Mario said he served with the U.S. Marine Corps. Thank you very much for your service. I actually did quite a bit of support for the U.S. Marine Corps, especially in the field. And I actually used FreeNAS mostly because it was a classified environment. So I couldn't let the technicians even touch, even see the equipment. I wanted something open source so I could go and, you know, get my people to vet it and make sure that we didn't have, you know, some nasty stuff hiding on it. And cost. I'm sorry, the Marine Corps is really cheap.
I can confirm that statement.
Yes. So FreeNAS really appealed to the colonel that I built this equipment for. It's actually was bolted in the back of a Humvee and was basically a mobile data center that went out into the field with the Marine Expeditionary Force. Anyway, you fast forwarding a couple of years, the world is changed. Those that are running on premise are doing it for some very specific reasons. General computing is moving to the cloud. We're all kind of, you know, that's facing the reality. However, there's a lot of things that don't make sense, like surveillance. So when I was actually digging through your website, I was going, I wonder if they actually went through and got certifications with the big boys like Genentech, Access, you know, Honeywell and things like that. And lo and behold, I saw a whole bunch of logos. That's where I'm seeing a lot of on-premise work going and getting bigger and bigger. So your hardware looks very much like what I used to have to build from scratch. They look like, you know, started off as white box servers and kind of grew up. Tell us a little bit, you know, how well does it all fit in? And what kinds of challenges does the surveillance world have with on-premise storage?
Yeah, if I were to tell you, the most common consumers of TrueNAS Enterprise in the enterprise, media and entertainment and other research type of applications where there's tons of data, clearly that there's a cost benefit to doing it that way. And surveillance is also one of those ones that collects a lot of stuff. Data storage or storage is the only one of the three essential elements of IT that both works 20 all the time and serves stuff, right? Compute and memory do their thing while they're doing their thing. Compute networking, I should say. Storage has to keep the data asleep and stored well and protected at night. IX systems actually became the purveyor of TrueNAS because it had a lot of expertise in FreeBSD, and it was originally designed for FreeBSD. So our hardware that you mentioned, Brian, goes back to the company originally, and we still do sell it to folks who want to buy servers. A great server that's optimized for open source operating system workloads. So our heritage goes forward with that. Most people who use the software do it on their own equipment, whether it's refurbished or stuff they go out and buy themselves, because they're looking to architect it. And you helped me do a quick commercial for the company, Brian, in the sense that if you're looking for the easy button and you just want to get the hardware, have it be fully integrated and come with your typical enterprise support, the stuff you expect when you buy a storage appliance for any enterprise workloads, that's where IX Systems comes in. But on the surveillance side, I'd say that for a lot of folks, they're wanting to drive the cost down in order to not necessarily spend less, but to then increase the amount of coverage they can get. So a lot of people think, hey, it's always about saving money. I think a lot of folks are looking to open source storage as an opportunity to not spend less money, but just store more data. That's for surveillance as well as other use cases where you can never have enough storage.
Now, I want to talk security, but before we do have to thank another great sponsor of this week in enterprise tech, and that's Code Comments, an original podcast from Red Hat. Now, you know when you're working on a project and you leave behind a small reminder in the code, you leave a code comment to help others learn from your work. This podcast takes the idea by letting you listen in on two experienced technologists as they describe their building process. Now, there's a lot of work required to bring a project from whiteboard to development, and none of us can do it alone. The host, Burr Sutter, is a Red Hatter and a lifelong developer advocate and community organizer. On each episode, Burr sits down with experienced technologists from across the industry to trade stories and talk about what they've learned from their experiences. Now, the cool thing about this podcast is to bring real-world experts to you to provide tools and techniques that apply to even your scenarios. In fact, the deep learning episode brings you toolkits to help reduce the barrier for your organization. Get rid of all that noise and get you there fast. Episodes are available anywhere you listen to podcasts and at redhat.com/codecommentspodcast. Search for Code Comments in your podcast player. We'll also include a link in the show notes. And we thank Code Comments for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Now, we've been talking with Mario Blandini. He's from IX Systems. We've been talking a lot about open source storage. I'm sure that Chibert's got some more questions. Chibert?
Oh, yeah. So I need to bring this up only because FreeNAS was ZFS. And shall we say, Linus Torvalds and the Linux crew had a big argument with Oracle on ZFS. But you guys don't use that version. You're using OpenZFS, right?
Yeah.
If you tell us more about that.
Sure thing. Yeah. From a history perspective, there's a lot of that political history. We even recently, in bringing OpenZFS and making it a first-class citizen running on Linux, we are kind of in that a little bit of a religious debate. It turned out that when we made that transition, it was much to do about nothing, and actually a lot generated a lot more excitement. So think of OpenZFS as having its own development community involving companies like Delphix, certainly IX Systems is a part of it, Nutanix and other companies do contribute to that. So it is really carrying forward the original vision of ZFS, which is to create a zettabyte of data freedom. And we being the most deployed storage operating system, we're not quite there yet. Give us another 8-10 years, and I think we could reasonably point to there being a zettabyte of data behind TrueNAS and thus OpenZFS. But think of it as its own project that has its own governance. We just had our a conference recently in San Francisco with all the developers and sharing some tips and secrets on how to optimize performance. And certainly you could look at a lot of the feature functionality over the years as having really improved. So it makes it a lot easier for folks to deploy and not even worry about it. I mean, there used to be days when folks wouldn't we care in storage about exactly how you laid your hard drives out and all that sort of other stuff. These days, things work a lot better than they had, and more of a turnkey experience. So, which is why I tell folks, even if you're in the enterprise and you don't think that open source is for you, maybe you haven't tried what open source is these days. It has matured and gotten a lot more turnkey for folks who don't want to do a DIY project, but can at least install some software to turn some bare metal into some storage.
Well, when we're talking about the capabilities of the software, in so many instances, we see software of this sort go in one of two directions. Either it becomes more and more full-featured, offering, you know, new and exciting things. It provides indexing and security, and now it's a database. Now it's something else. It walks the dog, it freshens your breath, it whitens your teeth, all of these things. The other direction is one where it says, we're going to take away all that. We're going to focus on this one core activity. Do that, provide some API hooks, and we'll do our thing, let other people join us to do the others. Which one do you think will be the long-term direction, broad direction, for what you're doing?
Yeah, for what we're doing, I'd say that it would be door number two, in the sense that we exist to help people from having to re-implement build their own storage, right? There used to be how many operating systems in the world, and now there's far fewer of them because you don't need a lot of operating systems. We happen to believe as the life goes on, a lot of the storage stacks built by other enterprise technology companies are not going to survive. A lot of them acquired and put together in portfolios of bigger companies. With the idea that TrueNAS is here to stay, think of it as that door number two where it does what it does very well. And by us with TrueNAS scale moving to Linux, our model that we see is that you would take Linux-based storage applications that do all of the things like freshen your breath and index data. We've already have a really cool development ecosystem with over 1,000 apps available in application charts for TrueNAS scale. And we've just only released that software in February of this year. So to your model question, it would be one where IX systems with TrueNAS would make sure that the base functionality remains as easy to use and bulletproof as possible, doing the development necessary to keep it secure and such. But let's just say up the stack will be with apps running natively as containers on the storage device.
Well, you did mention one of my favorite words in that answer, and that's security. So, you know, obviously, as we said earlier in the show, privacy and security are not the same, but they're linked. And both enterprises, consumers, and governments are becoming much more interested in both of these things. Would you say that TrueNAS is interested in making security or making it easier for other people to provide security for the storage or some combination of the two?
It's probably a couple different layers there. Brian mentioned one of them in the pre-show huddle about how Active Directory and access controls in general are handled. That's something that the underlying storage needs to be able to support any of those environments and just be able to do it the same way you would expect from an enterprise storage device that you bought from a proprietary vendor, right? So think of that as being at least the things that the storage needs to do. As you guys were talking about HIPAA and other things, a lot of it has to do with how you use a technology, not the technology itself that dictates some of that. So there are opportunities higher up in the stack for things that could improve security, but think of what IX is focused on is making sure that to the extent that you deploy this, and in a lot of these cases, these are on-premises storage devices that are air-gapped from the entire world supporting back-end applications. So for our small office users and folks that are using it for a lot of those sort of other things, we often get told that our software is too hard to use compared to some of the small office, home office products, which are built more for that audience who and don't have the folks that can touch and manage all the security settings. So TrueNAS is certainly built with enterprise in mind, though we have folks using it from, you know, small mini boxes at their home to, you know, 20 plus petabytes per system in some of our large users in universities, all without paying us any money, which we're excited about because, as I mentioned before, we're here to spread the benefits of data freedom, get people to try it. And if they try it and they use it and they like it, that's awesome because then maybe next time they need some storage, they'll think of us if they need a SLA or they need a support contract.
Well, you segued beautifully because unfortunately time flies when you're having fun and we're running out of time. So Mario, thanks so much for being here. But you know, I want to give you a chance to tell a little bit folks at home a little bit about where they can find more about IX Systems, maybe how they can get started and maybe try out some stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we say free to try, but it's really free to use. So if you have never made an attempt to use TrueNAS and you've got a VM or you've got some gear laying around, odds are that it would work great on that. We have a community of 250,000 users. And in the case of TrueNAS Scale, our hyperconverged product, 40,000 different folks helped us test and do bugs and all that documentation stuff. The easiest way to get started is go to TrueNAS.com. We've got forums and a Discord channel there for support, but you can just download the software and use it. And if you need any help, there's the forums, as I mentioned, a Discord channel, there's Reddit. Think of it like an open source project where you're free to use it. And where iX comes in, if you have the need to get some new hardware, or you're looking for an easier way to do it with a turnkey support model, that's where we come into play. Usually a lot less expensive than what you might otherwise get a quote from the enterprise vendors.
Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the best dang enterprise and IT podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my wonderful co-host, especially Mr. Brian G. I want to thank Mr. Brian G. First, what's going on for you in the coming weeks, Brian, and where can people find you?
I'm actually really curious on how many of my free NAS machines are still running. I recycle a lot of old servers that people didn't want anymore. So my hardware was free. My software was free. It played really nicely with my NFS, NIS systems. It played nicely with my Active Directory. And, it was the perfect answer for really, really cheap commands. And universities are, that cheap also. Anyway, I'm actually working on things again with Makerspace. The Holiday Matsuri, which is actually a big show at a local hotel in Orlando, is basically it's a holiday themed anime cosplay and so forth. The person driving this is trying to wrangle me into going and making the Christmas tree in the middle of the booth intelligent. So that ought to be fun. I'd love to hear from you, get your ideas. Some people don't like what I say. Some people do. That's your opinion is very valuable. If you want to flame me, go right ahead. Just don't expect a nice answer if you flame me. But anyway, the easiest way to get me is on Twitter, and I'm still on Twitter. I haven't completely moved over to another platform yet, but I am ADVNETLAB, Advanced NetLab, and I was actually throwing some love towards the Yolink people. It's a very nice implementation of LoRa. If you've never had to do LoRa from scratch, there's a lot of moving parts. And the Yolink folks have taken a lot of the hassle out of it. In fact, the founder and I have been having a back channel chat about a potential new product. And we'll see how that goes. Ought to be fun. You're also welcome to throw email at me. I'm Chebert, spelled Cheebert at twit.tv. And you're also welcome to throw email at twit at twit.tv, and that'll hit all the hosts. Would love to hear from you. Have a great holiday season.
Thanks, Chebert. Well, we also have to thank the wonderful Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, what's going on for you in the coming weeks, and where can people find you?
Well, I'm back at work on Monday, so back doing my normal things. I'll be back on the social networks, everything from Twitter and Mastodon to LinkedIn. I'll be back doing LinkedIn Live next week. I've got a ton of written things due before the end of the year. And fortunately, because I don't have nearly enough to do, I've got a new keyboard that just came in that I'm going to be doing a review of. I do a lot of typing, and so I am always looking for the next great keyboard. One arrived today, and it's looking promising, so I'll have some words about that. We'll look forward to seeing how many of you have the same keyboard and can agree with me or disagree, ideally without the flames.
Thanks, Curtis. Well, folks, we also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to get your enterprise and IT goodness. We want to make it easy for you to listen and catch up on your enterprise and IT news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv /Twiet. There you'll find all the amazing backup of those that we have. We have a lot of them. All the show notes, the co-host information, the guest information, of course, the links of the stories that we do during the show. But more importantly there, next to those videos, you'll get your those helpful download and subscribe links. Support the show by getting your audio version and your video version of your choice. Use it on any one of your devices or even on any one of your podcast applications because we're on all of them. Definitely subscribe and support the show. Plus, you've also probably heard, we also have Club Twit. That's a great way to support the network and the show. It's a members-only ad-free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus feed that you can't get anywhere else, and it's only $7 a month. And there's a lot of great things about Club Twit. In fact, one of them is the exclusive access to the members-only Discord server. You can chat with hosts. You can chat with producers. We have separate discussion channels. Lots of great special events that go on there. So definitely join Club Twit. Be part of the fun, be part of the movement. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit. And also, Club Twit also offers corporate group plans as well. It's a great way to give your team access to our ad-free tech podcast. The plans start with 5 members at a discounted rate of $6 each per month, and you can add as many seats as you'd like. And this is a great way for your IT departments, your developers, your tech teams, your sales teams to stay up to date with access up to all of our podcasts. And just like the regular membership, you also get access to the Twit Discord server and get the Twit Plus bonus feed as well. So twit.tv/clubtwit. Now, after you subscribe, definitely impress your family members, your coworkers, your friends with the gift of Twiet. It's the holiday season. You might as well give them a really good gift. We talk a lot about fun tech topics on this show, and I can guarantee they will find it fun and interesting as well. So definitely have them subscribe to Twiet as well. Now, if you're already subscribed and you're available on Friday, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, we do this show live. That's right, right here, right now at live.twit.tv. There's all the streams there. You can choose one of them. Come see how the pizza's made, all the behind the scenes, all the fun stuff. Of course, you know, we have a lot of fun here. We have a lot of banter. So definitely check it out. Jeff, the live stream. Of course, if you're going to watch the live stream, definitely jump into our infamous IRC channel as well. IRC.twit.tv is the website or the server. Use another client. Definitely jump into the Twit Live channel there. Of course, we have a lot of amazing characters that are in there. They returning characters, new characters, Reverb Mike, Liquacious, Adam24, Bitcoin and Assassin. Love that. So a lot of people in there. Definitely join them. Be part of the chat room. Be part of that movement. And join them at irc.twit.tv. Now, definitely hit me up. I want you to hit me up because I want to hear about how we're doing on the show, different topics you want. Go over to twitter.com/LouMM like right now. Send me a message. Send me a direct message. Send me a public message. Whatever you want to do, I'd love to hear from you. Of course, you can always hit me up on LinkedIn as well. I'm a Louis Maresca on LinkedIn. You know, lots of people send me messages on there, whether it's about my normal work week for Microsoft or if it's just want to talk about tech or even talk about some of the trends that are out there. So definitely hit me up there. If you want to know what I do at Microsoft, definitely check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There it is. It's really the latest and greatest ways for you to customize your Office experience. Develop on Office. You can create, you know, web-based macros now using JavaScript, TypeScript to be able to run them, you know, behind the scenes without actually having to have Excel open. Definitely check out Office Scripts. Check out all the latest greatest ways for you to customize your Office experience. I want to make sure I thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we couldn't do this show without them. So thank you for all your support over the years. I want to thank all the engineers and staff and Twit. Happy holidays to them because they do a lot of work and they deserve some time off. So thank you all for your support. Of course, I want to thank Mr. Brian Cheechiebert one more time. He's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer. That's right. He does all the bookings and the plannings for the show, and we couldn't do the show without him. So thank you, Cheebert, for all your support over the years. Definitely couldn't do the show without you. Before we sign out, I want to thank our editor for today because, you know, they're going to make us look good. I make lots of mistakes, so they make me look, you know, smart. So thank you for that. Of course, I want to thank our TD for today, our wonderful Mr. Ant Pruitt. He does an amazing show called Hands On Photography. Ant, what's on the show this week?
Well, thank you, Mr. Liu. This week, I took a look at a micro panel from the folks at Blackmagic Design. It's a tool specifically used for color grading inside of DaVinci Resolve. And spoiler alert, I'm really trying to sweet talk Queen Pruitt into letting me buy one. That thing is so daggum awesome. Oh, twit.tv/HOP.
Thanks, Ant. Well, until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine, and each week I join with my co-host to bring you This Week in Space, the latest and greatest news from the final frontier. We talk to NASA chiefs, space scientists, engineers, educators, and artists, and sometimes we just shoot the breeze over what's hot and what's not in space books and TV. And we do it all for you, our fellow true believers. So whether you're an armchair adventurer or waiting for your turn to grab a slot in Elon's Mars rocket, join us on This Week in Space and be part of the greatest adventure of all time. We'll be right back.